Where is the covenant with Abraham found? Genesis 12. Where's the covenant with David found? 2 Samuel 7. If I wanted to read the history of the nation of Israel, I would start in Genesis and go through what book? What book? Leviticus? Esther, ask your children. They'll help you. All right, so that's the books of history, right? Okay, through Esther. Okay, your answers weren't wrong, but they weren't far enough. Okay, so we'll go through Esther. What follows Esther? What kind of books? What? Poetry, very good. Five books of poetry, that's right. And then after that comes the real big prophets, right? They were very important, that's why they're called major, correct? They're linked, right? Major prophets. And there were what, 15 of those? Five, that's right. And 12 minor prophets. All right, good, so all of that together from Genesis to Malachi, that equals 66, correct? 39. Okay, good. All right, 39. And in the New Testament, how many? 27. Good. And if I wanted to read about the life of Christ, what four books? Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. All right, good. All right, so I wish we had time to do more of the 100 questions, but our time is limited, so we're going to do the questions at the top of the lesson 15 today. Wyatt, what is the book of Proverbs about?
A collection of wise sayings.
Collection of wise sayings. Most of them are Solomon's, but not all of them are Solomon's, and we talked about that. All right, good. Good answer. And what is the book of Ecclesiastes about, Raylan? Got life under the sun. That's fleeting. You can't hold on to it. You leave it all behind. The vanity. He uses that term vanity of life under the sun. There's no profit that you could put it in your pocket, take it with you when you die. Okay. And then, Damien, what is the book of Ecclesiastes, that title? What does it mean?
The preacher.
The preacher. That's right. You find that in the very first verse. And then, what's it about, Chad? Where's Chad? There he is. What's it about?
About a
king who was in love with a woman. Okay, that's right. It's a love triangle. It's about a king who was in love with this shepherd girl. He wanted to make her part of his harem, along with several hundred others. And but she's in love with the shepherd boy, and she's got to make a choice. Beautiful love story. Real good lessons in the book of the Song of Solomon. Okay. This next question probably may not be as clear. I've reworded it. I got which books in the Bible deal with the period of the kings. I've reworded it to say the history of the king. But anyway, how would you answer that? Now you answer, Michael. All right, through 2 Chronicles 36. That'd be one way to do it. 1 Samuel 9 through 2 Chronicles 36. Some may answer this question through Malachi 4, but actually the kings, once the kingdoms are destroyed, there are no more kings. So after I've done it to do the history of the kings. Some may say 1 Samuel 10 versus 1 Samuel 9, and it's not critical. 1 Samuel 9 is where the first king is introduced. His name was what? Saul. 1 Kings 10 is where he is anointed king. So anyway, if you have those general areas, it allow you to be adept in using your Bibles and know where to go and what's covered in this particular section. All right. So today we're going to continue discussing the period we call the Jewish dispensation, God's dealings with this nation through a national law that was given at Mount Sinai. When was that law given, approximately? What?
1500.
About 1500. And when does your Old Testament end about? The record of it. What's the last book? About what would it be dated? About 400. So for the next 1100 years that are covered in your Old Testament, plus the 400 years of silence, plus the first few books of your New Testament, they're under this Jewish dispensation. So it's good to know what it is and what it covers. All right, so we're looking at the divided kingdom. So you started with a monarchy. Who were the three kings of the monarchy? Saul, David, and Solomon. And so here we are in 1 Kings chapter 12. And so Rehoboam becomes king. That's Solomon's son. So he goes and he consults, first of all, verse 6, with the elders, the older men in the nation, and sought counsel. You know, it's interesting, sometimes parents want their kids to just be with younger people, and that's good, but there's nothing wrong with them knowing some older folks and associating with them somewhat, because sometimes older folks can give some counsel that younger people will not or cannot give. But in this particular case, Rehoboam sought the advice of the elders about his rule. And so verse 7, they said, if you'll be a servant to this people. I thought he was king. That's what kings are supposed to do. That's what husbands are supposed to do. That's what mothers are supposed to do. That's what elders are supposed to do. Anytime God delegates authority, it's for the service of those under their rule. Lose sight of that, authority goes to one's head, they misuse it. And so this is a great lesson here. These older men said, use your kingship to serve. When Jesus got the disciples together before his death, he washed their feet. He said, I'm your Lord and Master, but I'm washing your feet. He was teaching them humble service. And so a lesson that we need to imbibe. We'll talk about humility as one of our character traits in our Wednesday night studies, if the Lord is willing. He would not listen to the older men. The younger men, essentially in verse 9 following, told him, raise the taxes, make it harder on them. You're the king. Do it for your own advantage. And so the result was, in verse 16, when all Israel saw the king did not listen to them, the people answered the king, saying, what portion do we have in David? What do they mean by David? Is David still alive? What do they mean by David?
His dynasty.
That's right. We have no inheritance in the son of Jesse. To your tents, O Israel. Now look after your own house, David. So Israel departed to their tents. And so there's your division of the kingdom right there. Taxes were a big factor. Were taxes a big factor in the formation of a separate country from Britain? Yes, it was. The one you live in. So taxes can be a big factor, and here it was back here as well, in the division of this kingdom. So, 1 Kings 12, here on your lesson, through 2 Kings 17, the rest of 1 Kings, all of 2 Kings, has to do with the divided kingdom up to chapter 17. We're going to look at some verses in chapter 17 in a moment. And then 2 Kings 18 through 25, there'll only be one of those two kingdoms. One of them is called the Northern Kingdom, or Samaria, or sometimes called Ephraim. The Southern Kingdom is called Judah, sometimes called Israel, Hofer Park. But that's the Southern Kingdom and the Northern Kingdom. Okay? And 2 Chronicles... Go ahead and turn over to 2 Chronicles chapter 10. So you have the reign of Solomon coming to an end here, verse 30 and 31 of chapter 9, and then verse 1 of chapter 10, then Rehoboam went to Shechem, for all Israel had come to Shechem to make him king, and then you have the division of the kingdom. Unlike 2 Kings that covers both the north and the south, 2 Chronicles focuses on the southern kingdom, the rest of its record. Just something to be aware of. So, this event that we just read about in 1 Kings chapter 12, or also 2 Chronicles chapter 10, occurred about 931 B.C. So, you see on your lesson that the first captivity of the southern kingdom by Nebuchadnezzar, who ruled the Babylonian Empire, the Chaldean Empire. There's three times he came against them and took captives. The first one is about 605, 606, right in that time frame. So you can see how long that kingdom lasted. And on your chart, number four, you will see some division. It says kings, captivity, return. And then it'll say divided 325 years. And that 325 years is computed from the figures we just gave you. 605 to 930, something like that. 325 years. Actually, the southern kingdom didn't last that whole period. So you started 931. When the kingdom divided, and you'll see on your lesson that the northern kingdom was conquered by the Assyrians in about 722 or 721. So they lasted about 200 years until they came to an end. And there was no more northern kingdom. They never had another king. When the southern kingdom was taken by Babylon, and finally the temple destroyed in 586 or 7, they never had another king. But anyway, I just wanted to explain where we get those figures on that lesson on chart 4. That 70 years of Babylonian captivity, that's for the southern kingdom. There was no more northern kingdom. But the 70 years of captivity for the southern kingdom. When I say return 135 years, it didn't take them 135 years to return. Obviously, on a chart, you try to be brief. So you have from 586 or 7 to about 536, that's their 70 years of captivity. Then from 536, when Cyrus issued the return, until the end of your Old Testament, 400, that's where you get this 135 years. Okay? And then, of course, the period of silence. So maybe that explains better these things on chart 4, that period of 1,050 years that we have there, covered in 1 Samuel 10 through Malachi chapter 4. All right. I said on your lesson, see the map. You'll have to look in your Bible for a map, but it'd be good with your family and your family Bible study to show your children the northern kingdom and southern kingdom and get some familiarity with that and show it in relationship to what those countries are called today so they can identify when they hear the news or things being spoken of that that's that particular area. All right, we gave you a chart of the kings of the two kingdoms. You should have that, chart number 5. And up at the top, we've got the United Kingdom, that period of about 120 years, Saul, David, Solomon, with the verses there. And then we have the divided kingdom, the north and south. We've got those verses like we have here on your lesson, those chapters. Some count 19 kings each, depends on whether you count the usurper, for example, and how you count them also in the northern kingdom, whether everyone is counted. But I've counted, the way I've done it, I've enumerated 20. And you have the verses there that you can go check for yourself. Now, what is interesting, and we note this on the lesson, note the worst and best kings. And we pointed out that the northern kingdom had all bad kings. For 200 years, they were ruled by bad kings. So you start out here with Jeroboam, years of his reign, the period of time, dates. But you know we have good or bad. And you know you can go down that column and you'll either see bad or especially bad, mostly bad. They're all bad. None that served Jehovah 200 years. So their kingdom came to an end. God finally brought judgment. One thing this tells you is something about the patience of God. He sent prophet after prophet after prophet. They wouldn't listen. They wouldn't listen. Warning them, but they wouldn't listen. Finally, after 200 years, the cup of iniquity was full. God brought judgment upon them. We're going to read about that in just a moment. All right, so there's your references for those kings. Now, on the other side of the chart, you have the southern kingdom or Judah. And as you go down the good or bad column, you'll note I have mostly bad or mostly good or bad or good. Down on Ahab, good to bad, changed, and so forth. And you get down to Josiah, number 16, I have best. He's best. Now, Hezekiah, I have good. Some have suggested I ought to put very good, and you could do that, very good. He was very good. The problem with Hezekiah, a couple blotches on his record. When he showed his treasures and his pride. And another, when he gave Sennacherib stuff of the temple instead of trusting seemingly Isaiah. But nevertheless, he was a good king, did some great reforms, Hezekiah. But Josiah, as best I can tell from the record we have, was the best king they had. And that's interesting because do you remember about when Josiah became king? About what was his age? 8. And then at 12 and 16 and 20, you have remarkable, at 16 and 20, you have remarkable things in his reign. And at 8 years and 12 years, a young man that was devoted to God. What if he had just listened to his fellow peers? What if he had just listened to grandpa or dad? His dad was wicked. His grandpa was one of the most wicked kings there was, Manasseh. Somebody had influence on Josiah. I don't know if it was a priest or what, but in any case, one of the best kings there was. Early on in his life, he set his mind to do the will of God. All right, that's an interesting story, but we don't have time for all of that. I want to go to 2 Kings chapter 17. Up above, we said 1 Kings 12 through 2 Kings 17. The divided kingdom. This is a record when the southern kingdom comes to an end. There's some very important lessons here as to why God brought this kingdom to an end. Now, here these lessons are recorded. So the kingdom in the south can witness all of this. You'd think they would say, we'll never make that mistake. But they did not learn from the experience of their sister. And so here we are today. We can read about the north and the south and why God brought them to judgment. And it's written The New Testament tells us what's written. It's written for our instruction. But we can read it and dismiss it just like the Southern Kingdom did. That's our choice. But here God is very clear as to why he brought this judgment on the Northern Kingdom. All right, let's look at 2 Kings chapter 17, verse 7. This came about because the sons of Israel had sinned against the Lord their God. It brought them from the land of Egypt. We talked about Exodus pointers. So the Exodus happened about when? 1450, 1500. Here we are at the end of the Northern Kingdom. What did we just say the date was? About 722, 721. So we're talking about 700 years later. And look what the Bible is doing. What the Holy Spirit is doing. So look back. Look at the Exodus. And here we are today, a day that should be a special day to everybody gathered here. Because on this day of the week, your hope was made secure. The gospel was confirmed beyond doubt. On this day of the week, Jesus arose from the dead. And so, a memorial he set up before he died to remember his death and resurrection. We call it the Lord's Supper. 2,000 years later, he wants us to remember the resurrection. So there's Exodus pointers, and throughout your New Testament, there's resurrection pointers. And so here he says, he brought them up from the land of Egypt. But now note in verse 8, they walked in the customs of the nations. You'll see on your lesson the influence of the world. They live like the world around them. That's the way society is. When Paul wrote to the Ephesians, he said, we were by nature children of wrath. We lived in a society that did this and that, and that's the way we lived and talked and thought. And so we can adopt. You know, your young people know other young people that curse and tell dirty jokes and never serve God and whatever. So, and we are in a work world where we're with all kind of people. So we can adopt the customs of the nations. That's what they did. And so, drop down, if you will, to verse 11. There they burned incense on all the high places as the nations did. There again, that influence. As the nations did. So they practiced idolatry. They've got it from the nations. And they were provoking the Lord in doing that very thing. All right, let's go down to verse 13. The Lord warned Israel and Judah. We just talked about that. He kept warning them and warning them through all his prophets and every seer, saying, turn from your evil ways. Now, what's God's commandment? Echoing. When we studied about Moses' sermon, where's Moses' sermon recorded? Deuteronomy. And we talked about all through that book, Moses preached about commandments, statutes, judgments. He mentioned it time and again, pointing the people to it. Because he said, you're getting ready to go into this land God's going to give you, but whether you stay there or not, and are profitable there or not, depends on this, that you respect God's commandments, statutes, and judgments. So here God sent prophet after prophet after prophet, said, keep my commandments, my statutes, according to all the law which I commanded your fathers, and which I sent to you through my servants, the prophets. However, they did not listen. We can make that choice too. And stiffen their neck. Nobody's going to make me do that. Hard-headed, stubborn, stiffen their neck. Like their fathers. Now note, here's the underlying problem right here in verse 14. If I tell you I carried with me today when I came in here a can of pepper spray, and I'm getting ready to spray this whole auditorium. It's right here in my pocket. You're just still sitting there. Why? You don't believe me. That's right. If you believed me, you'd vacate the premises. Or Michael might come up here and tackle me. That's right. You did not believe what I told you. That's the underlying problem. And so you have that right here in verse 14. Verse 15, they rejected his statutes and his covenant, which he made with their forefathers. Look at the end of the verse. The Lord had commanded them not to do like them. Don't do like the nations. Don't let them be your model and your standard. And you see that there in verse 15. Verse 16, they forsook all the commandments of the Lord their God. And then they went into idolatry. And verse 19. So verse 18 said, none was left except the tribe of Judah. And one other tribe was assimilated with them, so that they said there was one tribe, and there were 10 tribes in the north. So Judah did not keep the commandments of the Lord their God, but walked in the customs which Israel had introduced. Good grief. They watched their sister up there, did the same thing. And so God afflicted Israel, and he would hope that Judah would take a lesson from that. You can read about that in the prophets like Jeremiah and Ezekiel. So verse 23, well, let me start at 22. The sons of Israel walked in all the sins of Jeroboam. Who's Jeroboam? Which king was he in the northern kingdom? The first one. Think about that. Here's a man, 931. We're at 721, somewhere like that. 200 years later, what he did is still influencing people. What he put in place. You've heard of Calvinism, right? The concepts of Calvinism was introduced. Tell us, Wally, what man way back in the 300s? Augustine. Augustine. Wally had a real good class on history. The term comes from another man who systemized this. He lived about a couple years ago, right? Calvinism. Have any idea when he lived? 1500, right? Here we are today. Churches are infiltrated with it. And so this is not uncommon. Here they are walking in the sins of Jeroboam. Somebody said, my religion's an old religion. So? So it's an old religion. It could be an old era. Doesn't prove it's right. And that's what you have here. So then in verse 24, you have an important section. This is what these powerful kings did. The king of Assyria brought men from Babylon and from Cuthna and from Ava and from Hamath and from Sepharvaim and settled them in the cities of Samaria, in place of the sons of Israel. So they came in, they took some of the people living in the northern kingdom, they transported them to their land, they took some people they'd captive in other places and put them in Samaria. And what's going to happen? What's going to happen when people start living together for a while? They're going to intermarry, have children. So now you have a race that's partly Jew and partly something else. And that race comes to be known as the Samaritans. Here's your origin of this, what you read about in the New Testament, the Samaritans. All of this happened in Samaria, the northern kingdom. They not only had a mixed race, 9 verse 27, the king of Samaria commanded, said, take there one of the priests whom you carried into exile, let him go and live there, and let him teach them the custom of the God of the land. So one of the priests whom they had carried away into exile from Samaria came and lived at Bethel and taught them how they should fear the Lord, saying, oh boy, everything's lovely, but wait, keep reading. But every nation still made gods of its own and put them in the houses of the high places which the people of Samaria had made, every nation in their cities in which they lived. And so look down at verse 32. You know, people say, I'm religious. I'm a quote-unquote Christian. I use the term Christ now and then, at least. But look at this. They also feared the Lord and appointed from among themselves priests of the high places who acted for them in the houses of the high places. They feared the Lord and served their own gods according to the custom of the nations from whom they'd been carried away into exile. That's what happens to quote-unquote Christianity. There's some semblance of the gospel, but it's a mixture of all of the traditions of men throughout the centuries in denominationalism today. Samaritans finally got away from idolatry, but they still did have a mixed religion, a mixed race, and a mixed religion. So when you get to the New Testament, you have the Jewish race and the Samaritan race. They loved one another, didn't they? They couldn't stand one another. The Samaritan didn't even want a Jew coming through their territory and spending the night there. They would not socialize with them. There was bitterness. And thus, that lays the groundwork for that great story that Jesus told. We call it the story of the Good Samaritan. He leaped over racial boundaries to help a neighbor, regardless of his race. But here's the root of some of this. Now, when we get to Ezra, we'll see some more reasons for the bitterness that existed between them. It continued to heighten over the centuries. We'll save that for the book of Ezra. So many times, racial hatred is born out of something that happened hundreds of years ago. And we just borrow that from our ancestors. How foolish are we? Instead of looking at another person, that's my neighbor. I don't care what language he speaks, how much money he makes, about his physical posture, about his color of his skin. He's my neighbor. Forget about what happened several hundred years ago. But because of that, there's bitterness, ill will, mistreatment of people. Story of the Samaritans here in our study today. Yes?
I was interested in how God indicted the Israel, the nation of Israel, about following on God's living on his nation. Amos, when he is doing his speech to them, he talks about their inhumanity to one another and how cruel they were to one another. So it wasn't just this, you know, and the Samaritans or any of those people or anything,
it was each other. Once you leave fearing God and serving
him the way you should and take on the ways of the world, you start not loving the way you should.
All right, good point. That's exactly right. And so Amos was a prophet to Israel, warned them of their conduct toward their fellow man, their fellow Israelites, as Linda pointed out. Okay, so I just have a note here. There in the southern kingdom, all rulers except Athaliah were in the lineage of David. She was a usurper. But you might note on your chart, we have the dynasties marked with these asterisks. And in the southern kingdom, only Athaliah has an asterisk by it. She's the only one not in the lineage of David. On the other side, there's nine different dynasties. So that's just something to observe. 10 if you count Tibnah. All right, so quickly we've got to cover Job. the question sometime has been raised whether Job is a historical character or just a story that was told to teach a lesson. If you look at Ezekiel chapter 14, these two verses will help. They're not the only ones, but Ezekiel 14, verse 14 through 20. Verse 14, even though these three men, Noah, Daniel, and Job, were in its midst. So Job is paired with two clearly historical characters, Noah and Daniel. Just as sure as Noah and Daniel were historical characters, so was Job. Noah, Daniel, and Job. In the book of James, in chapter 5, and verse 11, he said, you've heard of the endurance of Job and have seen the outcome of the Lord's dealings. So when James wrote about it, guided by the Holy Spirit, he spoke of Job as a historical character, and the sufferings that you read about in the book of Job as real historical events. When did these events take place? Can't be certain. You'll note I have a note here. The time of the book, possibly in the patriarchal age, before the law was given. One of the indicators is the law is not referenced as a standard in the book of Job. Makes chapter 31 tremendously interesting because he chronicles his moral integrity, and that's for another lesson. In fact, I think Neil will be talking about that in the lesson he teaches on the character traits. But it's the problem of suffering. Why do the righteous suffer? Job had a mistaken view as well as his three friends, and that is the overriding theme that is dealt with in the book. Finally, a young man, Elihu, speaks, and he's got a better view of things than the four older guys. And then finally, God speaks, chapter 38, in those thrilling chapters, where he asked Job a list of questions he can't answer and said, who are you to be sitting in judgment on me? You can't even answer these questions. And so finally, Job repents, chapter 42, and he's restored to God's grace and to his prosperity. It's a great story if you hadn't read it in a while. But to understand the nature of the book, that you have Job, a man who was a righteous man but mistaken. Three friends, who as far as I know were decent guys but mistaken. If you don't understand that, when you read the book of Job, and you'll find this in class books and articles, they'll quote from the book of Job when it's really quoting error. Everything in the book of Job is not true. Everything in the book of Job is truthfully recorded because the Holy Spirit guided the writer. But that includes error. So you have to be aware of the story of Job to use that book properly. Okay, under the additional notes, we talk about a remnant left in Samaria. We'll not have time to deal with that, but that's some valuable things to recognize right here. Because when we say the northern kingdom was taken captive, which it was, there was a remnant, a small part of several tribes that were left in the land. So you see, I have 2 Chronicles 30. And if you were to go back to 2 Kings 17, where we were a while ago, that's when the northern kingdom was taken captive. It's the next chapter that begins the reign of Hezekiah. But here in the reign of Hezekiah, 2 Chronicles 30, you're going to see a reference to some tribes still having enough identity to have people who knew they were part of those tribes up in Samaria. Then you get to 2 Chronicles 34 to the time of Josiah. You're reaching toward the end now of the divided kingdom. And in the reign of Josiah, you see, there was still some remnant of those tribes that had been in the north. And in 2 Chronicles 35, all Judah and Israel are invited to this feast. And then when you get to the New Testament, that helps to explain some things. Jesus would say, don't go to the Gentiles or to the Samaritan, but to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. They were not considered part of Israel, and they were not even considered in the class of Gentiles in some passages. We say there's two classes, Jews and Gentiles, which is true. But sometimes you have Jews, Samaritans, and Gentiles. So just be aware of that. And we've given the basis for that in this particular lesson. And then, of course, you've got the woman in John 4:20 that spoke with Jesus and him speaking with her. All right? Any comments before I get into the questions? The kingdom divided into two main divisions known as, correct answer or answers, A and B, Israel and Judah. And again, I warn you that sometimes the term Israel may be used when it's talking about Judah later, so just be aware of that. But Israel and Judah, and then the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom, and sometimes the northern kingdom is called Ephraim, based on one of the tribes there. And so it's not Jews and Gentiles, obviously. The northern kingdom, what's the correct answer? A. None of the kings serve Jehovah. And that's almost incredible, isn't it? That they all turned to idolatry after seeing what had been done. For example, in the reign of David and Solomon, their predecessors. This is not history way off in the distance. Those three kings, Saul, David, Solomon, 120 years previous to that kingdom divided. We forget history quickly sometimes. And that can really impact the nation, the direction it takes. The southern kingdom, three. Correct answer. ABC. All of the kings except for the usurper Athaliah were in the lineage of David. Some of the kings served Jehovah, some did not, and it lasted over 100 years longer than the northern kingdom. So the northern kingdom, about 200 years, southern kingdom, a little over 300 years. Okay, and then number four is prophesied concerning Coniah, also called Jehoiakim. That, and this is very important. What's the correct answer? A. Why is it so important? What does it destroy? I thought Jesus did sit on the throne of David. On the physical throne of David in Jerusalem. What doctrine is that known of today? Premillennialism. Millennialism, there's a 1,000-year period. Millennial, 1,000. There are different views of whether Jesus comes before or after the 1,000 years, but the point is he's going to be reigning in Jerusalem, physical Jerusalem, for 1,000 years. But this passage in the Old Testament said no one would ever sit on the throne of David and prosper in Jerusalem. And so that's why that's so important. Job, number 5. A book that addresses suffering, problem of suffering. Okay, our time is up.